It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Last month at a campaign rally in Florida, I should say at a post-election rally in Florida, sounded like a campaign rally, Donald Trump said he's not the only president in history who has battled it out with the press.
Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, and Abraham Lincoln, and many of our greatest presidents fought with the media and called them out, oftentimes on their lies.
So that inspired us to do a little bit of historical fact-checking. Did Lincoln fight with the media? Did he call them out about lying to the public? Did he call them the enemy of the people? Here with me to help sort that out is Lincoln scholar, director of Hunter College's Roosevelt House Public Policy Institute, and author of the 2014 book Lincoln and the Power of the Press, The War for Public Opinion, historian Harold Hoser. Welcome. Thank you for coming in.
Great to be here, Brian. Thank you.
So I want to start with that quote from Trump, since we've been talking so much about Trump versus the media, and I've been saying it feels different and more heightened than any time in my lifetime right now. But maybe I'm wrong in the big sweep of American history. Are we just watching history repeat itself?
Well, we're watching something repeat itself, digestively maybe. It's not quite the same thing. Of course, Lincoln was more hostile and repressive when it came to the press, but it was a completely different circumstance, both in press culture and in the condition of the country. For one thing, every newspaper in America when Lincoln became president was either a Democratic or a Republican paper, outright, proudly carrying the party line, never varying from the party line. So everything a Democratic paper said about Lincoln was hostile. Everything a Republican paper said about Lincoln was praiseworthy.
Were there pro-slavery newspapers and anti-slavery newspapers? Did it break down like that at all?
The Southern Democratic papers were inherently pro-slavery. Most of the Northern ones were anti-slavery expansion. Only a fringe were radically, in quotes, abolitionist at that time, because it was still a fringe movement at the outbreak of the Civil War. But the other difference in the culture is that there was, President Trump says we're in a terrible mess. Lincoln really had a terrible mess in that he had a rebellion on his hands. Talk about an existential threat to the country and a collapsing country.
Really?
And dealing with the dissolution of the Union and invoking the constitutional provision that the privileges of the writ of habeas corpus can be suspended in the event of an act of rebellion. So that gave him unprecedented power. So with all that as context, the bottom line is, yeah, he was more critical of the press. In fact, after the Battle of Bull Run in July 1861, which the Union was expected to sweep and then end the rebellion, after the Union lost, Lincoln ran out of volunteers. He had called up 75,000 troops for 3 months. The 3 months were over. He needed to call up another 100,000 plus soldiers if the rebellion was to be squashed. And there were Democratic papers who said, don't volunteer. Mm. And Lincoln and he kept his hands off of it. But the administration, they did some things that are infamous in history, especially if you're a straightforward Bill of Rights person. And let's just take New York, because we're broadcasting from New York. A grand jury said 14 papers should be shut down. The indictment never came, but they recommended them by name. The State Department shut down the New York Daily News. That's not the same, but I love saying the New York Daily News. Huh? Not the same Daily News. The Brooklyn Eagle. Pro-slavery, outright racist papers were shut down. They were banned from the post office, so they couldn't be mailed to Southern subscribers. They were thrown off trains bound south.
By the government?
Yeah. State Department, Interior Department, Post Office Department. And this happened all over the country. General Grant wrote proudly and from his first command, I've confiscated the printing press. I've thrown the editor in prison. We had a fort right near Fort Schuyler, which still exists in Brooklyn Harbor, called Fort Hamilton. And it was called the Bastille of the North. Fort Lafayette. I knew I was wrong but Hamilton is on everyone's mind. Fort Lafayette. Editors were thrown into Fort Lafayette. They languished there without formal charges being brought against them. Again, so Lincoln was more critical of critical press than Donald Trump, but the crisis was real and the circumstances were different.
What made it stop?
The repression?
Mm-hmm.
Did I mention that it stopped? In the Lincoln era, it was going on up until a couple of months before he died, and that was after the war was almost won. So in 1864, here in New York, right before the presidential reelection campaign got underway, the leading Democratic paper in New York, the New York World, which some of our listeners may remember became the World Telegraph and Sun ultimately when all the papers merged, the New York World published a bogus presidential proclamation calling for 500,000 more volunteers.
Fake news.
Original fake news. And it came in the form of a dispatch from a wire service, not the AP. So most of the newspapers who got it at 1 in the morning regarded it with suspicion. And they checked with their Washington sources. They couldn't get it confirmed. The New York World, a Democratic paper, because the proclamation included a statement by Lincoln allegedly saying, oh, the war has been going terribly, they published it. Lincoln then signed his only direct order shutting down a newspaper and confiscating printing presses. And he had the newspaper man arrested. He was detained by General John Dix, who later became the namesake for a fort. And only after a couple of days did they realize that it was a sort of a harmless scam by a New York Times guy. He had left the New York Times. But he had devised a plot to put out this false news, fake news. The stock market would plummet. He would buy up some stocks, and then they would reveal as be false. The market, and he was thrown in prison.
Wow. And when you talk about fake news today, and I'm not talking about, you know, the way Donald Trump inaccurately uses the term fake news to apply to any New York Times story or CNN story that doesn't like the angle of, but the real Russian fake news, those kids, they're doing it for money. They're doing it because people buy Google ad adjacencies and things like that. So it's fake news for a profit, and you're telling me it was in Lincoln's day too.
At least on this one occasion, it wasn't politically motivated. It was for a profit. And the guy who was a friend of Reverend Henry Ward Beecher, who was a pretty famous New Yorker at the time, and he actually petitioned Lincoln to get the boy out of prison, and he was finally released.
The anti-Lincoln press was really harsh, something that most Americans, unless they're studying, you know, Lincoln history, don't get exposed to. For example, a Chicago reporter described the Gettysburg Address, as a string of silly, flat, and dishwatery utterances that would make the cheek of every American tingle with shame. Really?
Is that the Chicago Times?
I have it here as Chicago paper. I didn't write down which one.
And guess what had befallen the editor of the Chicago Times a few months before the Gettysburg Address? He had been arrested, his printing presses shut down, and he had been imprisoned for criticizing the arrest of a former congressman in Ohio. The guy had reason to be angry. And, you know, that's an interesting thing. Fake response, fake analysis. You know, you turn on analyses on different radio stations or TV networks today, and you get a completely different take on a presidential utterance. When the Gettysburg Address was uttered, it was seen as very political. So the Republican papers – and this flies in the face of the myth that it was a failure at the time. It wasn't. The Republican press said it was a masterpiece. The Democratic press said it was embarrassing because they realized this guy was getting ready to run for a second term.
We're talking history. We proudly talk history here on The Brian Lehrer Show. And we're doing it now with the Lincoln scholar, Harold Holzer from Hunter College. He is the author of the book, among many others, called Lincoln and the Power of the Press, The War for Public Opinion, so relevant with what we see going on in the country today. Lincoln actually owned a newspaper at one point, didn't he?
He invested in and came to the rescue of a German language newspaper. And he signed lawyers are not supposed to be their own clients, as we know. He created a contract where he would give the publisher $500, a lot of money in 1859, to get his newspaper press out of hock. And all the guy had to agree to do was not to print a word that was contrary to the Republican state and national platforms for 1 year. meaning the day after election 1860 when Lincoln was going to be. He assumed anyone who thinks he didn't think he was going to be a presidential candidate should look at the contract. And the odd thing is that, you know, Lincoln had no knowledge of German and was relying on friends to keep him apprised of what the Staatseinsiger was going to be writing. And at the end of the period – so here's how the press worked in 1860. He gave he ripped up the contract or, you know, endorsed it over to the editor whose name was Theodore Canisius. And then he had the state legislature buy up all the extant copies for no particular reason except that got the guy about $500 or $600 more money, as a result of which, sadly, there's not one copy surviving of that paper. And then he made him – he gave him a diplomatic post in Vienna. And lots of newspaper men who were loyal to Lincoln got jobs in the administration.
If we think he was so clean and pure in every way.
He was a politician above all.
But some of the stuff that was written against him, so racially charged, from your book, The New York World published a 90-page tract, Miscegenation, the Theory of the Blending of the Races, that claimed that if Lincoln were reelected, he would ruin the nation by making blacks socially equal to whites and encouraging interracial marriage. And that caused a stir.
That was an original dirty trick long before Richard Nixon. I mean, nothing is new, right? The editor sent it to Lincoln and asked for an endorsement, a blurb, thinking he'd just read that it's about everyone getting along, and he'd say people should read this book. They had duped a few anti-slavery people. Lincoln just put it in his drawer. He knew that it was bizarre. And it was a tongue-in-cheek advocacy of intermarriage because it was considered a radical notion then. But the New York campaign against him was brutal. And again, it was masterminded by the newspaper whose editor he had imprisoned.
Were the courts on the side of the press? Did they even take First Amendment claims to court at that time?
No, because they never produced the body. There was no habeas corpus. So they would be arrested by the military, these editors. They would be put into military prisons. Their cases would never be called. If they swore a loyalty oath to the Union after some hard time, and there are some great descriptions of editors, you know, eating maggot-filled meat on, you know, tablecloths made out of someone's long johns, pretty repulsive stuff. Then they would be freed if they signed the loyalty and oath and promise never to write anything disobliging. So the, you know, the dividing line, how do you define the loyal opposition versus treason, a dissent versus treason? And that's the fine line that editors who truly had a legitimate gripe had to walk.
During wartime,
during,
in that case.
During rebellion time. And of course, we saw it again in wartime with Wilson and you know, he cracked down on some dissenting press as well, but nothing like Lincoln. Lincoln is still the world's champion in this regard.
Do you think that the press now is becoming more of what it was like back in the 1860s, more politically identified news outlets? We're almost going, you know, modern technology is taking us back in time.
I think it's too fractured to compare it today. I mean, I think you can make a case up until the 2016 campaign that there was a parallel between, let's say, Fox/MSNBC and, you know, 1860s New York when it was the New York Times versus the New York World, or the New York Times and New York Tribune as progressive Republican papers versus the New York World. But there are so many outlets now and it's so scattered and their origins are so mysterious. That was the point in the Lincoln era. These were agents of the Democratic Party. They were part of the political machinery. And people, by the way, with all this fractiousness and with all of this pent-up anger and the vitriolic quotes that you've cited a few of today, there was 80% participation by eligible voters in presidential elections. So maybe honest vitriol without condemning it all as fake is what will stir people to participate more.
Is there any other lesson before you go for the press and you know, defending the First Amendment at a time when the president is calling the press the enemy of the people, other than to look back on history and say it was worse than we think it was?
I would say the lesson here is be very, very careful about citing Abraham Lincoln as your exemplar and your inspiration. First of all, it's very dangerous. It's presumptuous. We heard a quote last night about the tariff, which is not quite Abraham Lincoln, by the way, from President Trump. He quoted somebody else quoting Abraham Lincoln. And to compare the modern economy to 1848 America, which had no tax levies except tariffs, is you know, just using history through the wrong end of a telescope. And we should – I noticed that no one today in sort of the fact-checking stories pushed back at that.
No one called him out on that particular one.
No.
Like calling him out on comparing himself to Abraham Lincoln.
I knew Abraham Lincoln, and he's no Abraham Lincoln.
Harold Holzer is a real Harold Holzer. He is the Fanton Director of Hunter College's Roosevelt House Public Policy Institute, an Abraham Lincoln scholar and author of books including Lincoln and the Power of the Press, The War for Public Opinion. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come.